The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Well, seeing that drunk Santa wet himself really perked up my Christmas.
Disaster. Like eating a burrito before sex.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, you horror hoes. Get ready. Chris and I are going to deck your halls. Welcome to our fifth season finale, episode 43, that European Christmas holiday episode. Tonight, Christopher and I tackle the film The Children from 2008. So with the elves on the shelves watching my every move and the house all aglow waiting for Saint Nick to arrive, I know my family and I are all ready for Christmas. Christopher, how about you, good sir? Are you ready? Are the cookies and carrots ready for Jolly Saint Nick and his reindeer crew?
Yes, they are. In fact, I think I hear Saint Nick coming down right now. Let me see. Oh, ho, 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 Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas! All right, get out of here. All right, you're out of the way. All right, anyway, so yes, I am very much ready for Christmas season, as I know Tim is, and I have my shopping all done, and you know, it's just trying to get into the whole festive season, and then hopefully when Christmas is over and done with, we can go back to just a normal, regular new year. In this case, the upcoming 2020. So
yeah. Oh yeah, I hear you. You know, it seems like Thanksgiving this year was late. Well, it was late in the calendar year, and everything else seems to be, like, amped up and pushed up right now. I'm like, I've been feeling, like, the pinch for, like, the last couple of weeks. Pretty much ever since after Thanksgiving, I'm like, oh, crud. We had, you know, obviously had Black Friday, and then, you know, it's like 2 weeks later, it's like, oh, shit, it's like, it's Christmas. I'm like, I don't understand where the time went, you know?
It comes by so fast, doesn't it?
We've had these conversations in our previous Christmas episodes. It just seems like it comes by faster and faster every goddamn year. Sorry, Jesus.
It does feel like it just creeps up behind you, you know, because, you know, because it's like, you know, in November you have Thanksgiving. That's like pretty much like near the end of the month. Or a teetering on the end of the month, then all of a sudden you're pretty much like thrown into December. So.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say I'm pretty much ready. I'm still trying to capture, you know, Christmas holiday spirit. I don't want to say I'm forcing myself, but for lack of a better term, that's what I'll use. I'm like trying to listen to Christmas music. I'm trying to like chug down a couple of glasses of eggnog every now and then. You know, we've got the snow. We've had snow here since, well, you know, Thanksgiving. But I'm like, nothing seems to, I mean, I know it's here. I see the decorations up, and I love the decorations. But I haven't been filled with that, I guess, Christmas joy yet. And I'm hoping within the next 2 or 3 days that it'll get there, but it's. I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but it's like, oh, come on.
No, it's the you know what? I look at it as you get older, it just becomes. I mean, I'm not saying it takes the spirit out of you, but when you get older, you begin to sort of get less and less excited about it. I mean, that's how I feel. You know, I mean, because, let's face it, I mean, when we talk about this before, but how, like, even as far back as, like, the near end of October, you've already got people putting, like, Christmas decorations out, or, you know, even at stores and everything. So, you know, as we were younger, we enjoyed that, but as we get older, we begin to realize that in a certain way, it's just another holiday that we all celebrate, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the spirit and the joy of it doesn't go away right away or anything like that. It's just, as you get on in your years, you begin to sort of just
I don't know. Maybe it's like there's too many boxes to be checked. Like when you get older, you've got all these different like responsibilities, and then you got like you shop for like your extended family and your family, and then you've got to make plans to go here. And now you know for up until about 3 years ago, I didn't have to worry about making that many plans. I'm like, yeah, we go to my sister's or we go to my mom's, you know, but that was relatively all within, you know, 5, 10 miles, 15, 20 miles. You know, I go see, you know, our friends, Jeff and Leah and Mark and Kara and everyone. And like, but now it's like, holy crap, now we stayed away and we're driving there and we've got to try to cram in and so much stuff. And I'm like, I look forward to it, but it goes by so freaking quick. I mean, you snap your fingers, and it's like, well, now I'm back in Minnesota, and all my friends are back in Chicago. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, crap. All right, well, I'll see you guys in about 4 months.
Well, let me ask this, too. So before you were married and before you had kids, all right, when you celebrated Christmas, it was with family and everything. Do you feel like... at that point in your life, back then, it was a little more exciting as opposed to now? Or do you feel it's the reverse, you know? Like, how do you look at that?
Well, would you factor in, like, not having, like, at certain points, and having a girlfriend or a fiancé or, you know, all that stuff, and working, I wouldn't say I look forward to it more, but there's definitely more. You have more downtime to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But when you factor in, start having a wife, girlfriends, you know, sometimes even multiple jobs. Like at one point, I was having, you know, we all had, you know, 2-3 jobs at one point. But you had the jobs and you went home, and then. So I think, to answer your question in a long about way, not really, because there's always something going on. But you. When you're single, you have a lot more time to yourself, so there's a lot more time to, I guess, kind of, I wouldn't say find yourself, but just kind of like, I guess, find that joy. And sometimes that joy can also be kind of depressing, because if you don't have a girlfriend and all your friends are, you know, have boyfriends and girlfriends and you're kind of like the single person, that doesn't make it easier. But it's really a rough question to answer, but I'd say, you know... yes and no. If that
no, I ask that because I'm not married. I don't have kids. So,
yeah.
But as I get older, you know, I feel like it's just another day. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and I hate for it to be. I hate for it to become that. Like, oh, it's just, you know, another day. I'm like, because I really do love the spirit behind it, but sometimes I just find it hard to get into it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, you want it.
Well, and also, as much as, you know, I don't get into it as much, that doesn't mean, when I say that, it doesn't mean that I've turned into, you know, Scrooge or anything like that, you know. Or,
you're a green one.
Yeah. Or the Grinch. No, it's not that. It's just that the enthusiasm behind it
right. For
some kind of begins to go down a bit, you know. So, I don't know. I mean... yeah. Like I said, I'm not married. I don't have kids, so I guess you could say I don't quite relate to that. But you know,
all right. So I will say, I was trying not to end on such a downer of a note. Maybe I will say I am very happy and pleased to announce that my kids are taken care of. You know, my nieces and nephews.
Yeah,
all good to go. My wife is almost all good to go. I got one gift. I will say this. This is what kind of grinds my gears, if I could do the Peter from the Family Guy. Like, okay.
You know what grinds my gears? Okay,
you know what grinds my gears? Okay. So I ordered this. My wife wanted this, you know, painting thing. It's kind of a painting set.
Yeah.
And they had a special, like, coupon deal off, like 70% off. I'm like, oh, perfect. Okay. So I kind of find out which one she wants. I placed the order on December 9th. Now, for a point of reference, right now we're recording on the 16th of December. So I don't hear anything for like 2 days, 3 days. I'm like, okay, they said they got my order. They confirmed that I had my order. So then I email them. I'm like, hey, I see you confirmed my order, you know, 3 days ago, 2 days ago, whatever. And I want to know what the status of my order is. Oh, it takes 5 to 7 days to process the order. Then 7 to 14 days for you to deliver.
Oh.
I'm like... I've been accustomed to certain things. Now, this wasn't through Amazon. This is directly through the company. But Amazon gets my order, you know, 95% of the time, I get a confirmation within a day, maybe two, saying, okay, we've got your order, we're processing, it'll be shipped on such and such a date. Amazon, for the most part, has, you can order something and have it to your house within a day to 4 days tops, if it's not coming from like China or something. I'm like, so now I'm like, well, is it, and I specifically read the email like five times. I'm like, it doesn't say business days, it just says 5 to 7 days and 7 to 14 days. So I'm like, okay, well, depending on what they mean by that, because they never answered my other email, that could happen, that could come right on the 23rd or 24th, or it could come way after Christmas, which doesn't really fucking help me at all. So, yeah, I'm waiting on one gift, so I'm kind of like watching that anxiously to see if I can get that one more thing under the tree for my wife. Oh, but other than that, she's taken care of too. I mean, she's got two other things. It's all good. But yeah. The kids are taken care of. The nephews are taken care of. The nieces are taken care of. I'm like, you know, sometimes you can't win them all, you know?
Right, right.
But, yeah, that's what I got going on. Anything else with you, bud?
Not much of me. Well, I will say, you know, my Christmas shopping, like I said, is pretty much done. You know, it's just me and my mom, so all that's set. You know, we don't do the whole Christmas thing as much as we used to, simply because, you know, I mean, we could just go out and get whatever the hell we want, to tell you the truth.
I feel the same way about certain things too, but it's the spirit of it, you know.
Yeah, the spirit of it. No, you're right.
And then you're there the day after Christmas to return, like everybody's going to return everything that they didn't want.
Now, not to get off the subject of Christmas for a minute, I wanted to bring this up real quick before we get started into our episode.
Yeah.
And I suspect you've seen this, so I'm certain when I ask you this, it's really going to be a bit of a no-brainer. But did you happen to check out the new trailer for the upcoming Ghostbusters movie?
I have.
Oh, you have? All right.
In fact, I posted it on my Facebook wall, and I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm enthusiastically intrigued. If you remember back, two summers ago, before we did our Ghostbusters, the reboot with the girl all female cast episode.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it. We both said it was okay. It was
I recall saying that I wasn't too big on the movie.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't. You didn't hate it with the, like every fiber in your being.
No.
Yeah, not so every fiber that's why I meant okay.
Yeah, okay. Now I wanted to get it straight because I still remember the movie.
Okay, Christopher Kenning loves Ghostbusters from 2007.
No, don't do this to me. Please don't.
He wants to take Melissa McCarthy on a date.
But folks, if you haven't listened to that episode, please go further back into our archive and, you know, enjoy listening to, you know, my displeasure over the whole movie. Not because of, you know, necessarily the backlash towards it, just because of the fact that I didn't enjoy it that much. But anyways, yes, go on, Tim, I'm sorry.
Listen to me. Chris loved it. It's okay. Give it two thumbs up. I'm eagerly awaiting it. I mean, I was excited when I saw the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. Did you see the teaser trailer, Chris?
When the teaser trailer came out, it was just a shot out. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I do remember seeing a teaser for it where it was like a shot outside of the old barn, and it's like storming and raining outside, and the camera slowly, you know, dollies in, and then you see a tarp covering the Ecto-1, and you know, I mean, so I remember that, and I remember thinking at the time when that came out, I was a little skeptical of it because, in a way, it felt like, I mean, it grabbed my attention, but for some reason in the back of my head, I kept thinking to myself, you know, even for a teaser, I get the suspicion it feels more like it's something that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know why I felt that.
Like somebody maybe doing some kind of crowdfunding for it.
Yeah, yeah. Or it was just like sort of like a jokey kind of thing, you know. But yeah.
I read a couple of things saying, yeah, hey, you know, so-and-so's son is going to be, going to be, you know, writing and being part of the writing process. And he's gonna
be directing. Jason Reitman. Yeah, Ivan Reitman's son. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. I hope it happens. You know, but at that point I was like, okay, yeah, this could probably die within, you know, on somebody's table eventually somewhere before it even sees the light of day, if it does. But after seeing the trailer, I'm like, wow, this could really be a lot of fun. I remember I was texting some of friends of mine who are big Ghostbusters fans, and we got together for what we call Friendsgiving, which is, you know, about a week after Thanksgiving. We get together and we eat, you know, we just get to do potluck, and we get together, and it's just another chance for everybody to get together and drink and, you know, hang out that wasn't family.
Oh, yeah.
Close, you know, intermediate family, you know, our extended family and friends. I was talking to one guy about this, and he's like, yeah, I like it, but it's kind of dark. I'm like, I know, but I kind of like it that way. I'm like,
you know, I kind of agree with him, your friend. It does feel like it's a little dark, but, you know, at the same time, maybe that's an effective direction where they can take it. I mean, I do hope that when they make that, they sort of inject the humor that was in, you know, the first film, you know, as opposed to just focusing on it being on a dark level. I mean, they would have to if they were trying to get into the spirit of it.
I'm sure they would. And I was talking to him. He's like, well, he goes, another thing, it was concerning for him was that he didn't see any of the original cast. I'm like, yeah. No. I'm like, this is the first trailer. The cast is going to be there. I said, from everything I heard, it's going to be a passing of a torch. So everyone from the original first two Ghostbusters films will be there. And I've heard even a rumor that Rick Moranis will be a part of it, which was awesome because he hasn't done anything for like 35 years or something like that. 30 years.
Well, I hope that they have a part in the movie in the sense that they're just not there for a cameo. So that's the thing that hoping for, that they will not be that, you know?
No, from what I understand, it's going to be more like Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson trying to train like the new crop of Ghostbusters. That's at least what I've seen and what I've read and what I've heard. Without I don't want to have it spoiled for me, but I want to know just enough to, you know, I guess keep my interest going without having everything spoiled for me. But getting back to your question about like the comedy or the levity of it all, I did like there was a line in the trailer where Finn Wolfhard is under the table. He's like, remember that one time we came on summer vacation and we got killed underneath the table in the farmhouse? So I'm like, that kind of stuff is there.
Yeah.
And he's going to be like the grandson of Egon, I want to say.
Yeah, that's the impression I get. Hopefully you listeners out there have seen the trailer. If not, please go see, you know, please check it out.
You have to check it out.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, in case, I can't believe I'm saying this for a trailer, but, you know, spoiler alert, we get the, sometimes you never know, but we get the impression from it that it involves, like, a young relative of Egon Spengler, you know, their discovery of the Ghostbusters. And, of course, from the trailer, we're given the indication that the Ghostbusters have become more or less like ancient legends as opposed to, you know, still being in the business.
Again, not to get spoilers, Paul Rudd's in it, and he's like playing with the traps, and he thinks it's a prop, and it's a real thing, and that's what I love. And then you see a shot of like the Ecto-1 rolling around like the small town, and it's got they got the seat that pivots out from the car, and they're freaking using the blasters, and there's one thing where it was one of my favorite shots. It wasn't even with the blaster or with the Ghostbusters packs. It was with the Ecto-1 just tearing through the cornfield. I'm like, oh man, all right, it's on like Donkey Kong. I know it's a dated reference, but whatever. I'm old.
But you know, I mean, we'll see how it turns out. I am surprised that Sony and Columbia have finally decided to actually try to do a sequel, despite their sort of hopes for the Ghostbusters reboot from 2 years ago. You know, they were sort of banking on that thing being a bit of a hit, and it really didn't quite win over a lot of. I mean, I would say it won over some people, but it wasn't exactly the barn burner that they were hoping for, and I hope it's a lesson to the studios out there that, you know, if you're gonna satiate a fan base, you need to actually stick to satiating a fan base and not just think about, you know, hey, what if we just told the story again, but with, you know, a different type of cast? I mean, they're kind of doing it with this one, though, but it still feels like they're trying to link it together with the first two films. So that's the credit I'll give it with this one. But
They are. I feel that Jason Reitman is trying to do, at least in my opinion, right now without having seen the final product.
Yeah.
A service to the original Ghostbusters and mm-hmm. Ghostbusters 2. I mean, I know all the cast is back, even Bill Murray, which is Bill Murray has a tendency to be like the last holdout all the time for all the time, basically.
Well, it's not why. He's just being a lazy old fuck about it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. I like the guy, but he's being extremely lazy about it.
So Christopher, your homework, sir, from right now, from December. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, hear my voice. Today is December 16th, 2019. By the time we record, sometime in maybe end of January, beginning of February 2020, this is Chris's homework. Chris, it's a 45-minute documentary. It's called The Movies That Made Us. It's on Netflix. It's episode 2 or 3, I believe, maybe even 4. Anyway, it's a 6-part season, and one of them is Ghostbusters, and it tells you all the wonderful history behind Ghostbusters and how it almost didn't get made with Columbia and Universal. Was it Universal or Columbia, I think?
Columbia, yeah.
Columbia, and how all the beautiful stuff. It's a really awesome little documentary episode, and you're going to love it because it's got a ton of awesome like information. And I think it's really gonna knock your socks off. So I gotta
check it out. Yeah,
and we're gonna talk about it. And I will quiz you. And if you don't, I'm gonna throw rocks at your face.
All right, but I just gotta be. But just letting you know, though, it's not gonna make me take back my comment that I made about Bill Murray being a lazy old fuck about not trying to take.
But I will say this. Dan, they were talking to Dan Aykroyd, and they were talking to. I believe Ivan Reitman at the time, and they're like, "So is Bill in?" And they're like, "Yeah, we think he's in. Yeah, we think he's in."
Man, you know, he's just. I mean, like I said, I like Bill Murray, but but to this day, I feel like he really needs to just quit being an eccentric about it and just, you know, make a decision. You know,
even back in the day, he was an eccentric, and he was.
On Saturday Night Live. But you know what? You could only act like Neil Young. You know, Neil Young always did this whole thing where he's like, if he's in it, he kind of sort of is in it, and then he's not in it. You know, but he gets away with it because, you know, in my opinion, Neil Young gets away with it because he puts his effort into it, no matter what the problem is. I feel like now Bill Murray doesn't quite put as much effort into it in terms of his decision making. It's like, listen, dude, pick up the script, give it a read. You're pretty well off at this point in your life. You have nothing to worry about. Quit making appearances at people's, like, unknown parties because you want someone to take a selfie of you with somebody and make a decision, you know? I mean, don't stall. The more you stall, the more I sit here and I question your thinking ability. If I were you, I'd be saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to do it. I got nothing else going on.
Well, you know what? On that note, I will say, Bill, if you want to come to my next year's Friendsgiving, you have an open invitation. Come to my house. I would be more than happy to take a couple of selfies with you.
Yeah, and don't forget to invite me so I can sit there and tell him, listen, you know, you're a really bad PR person for yourself, pal. Make a decision, okay?
Well, I think it would be a really bad move for him. Not because it would hurt him, like, money-wise.
No, it wouldn't.
But because... No, if he appeared in the female Ghostbusters reboot and then kind of stiffed everybody on the other movie they're making of Ghostbusters when everybody else is coming back, I just think that would be a really bad just move in general.
But you know what, though,
It has nothing to do with money at all at this point because he doesn't need it.
Yeah, that's true. But I have a strange suspicion. I'm not saying he will do that, but I have a strange suspicion that it might come to that. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know why I'm thinking that, but I can see that bait and switch happening for some reason. I can see it happening, but I mean, my fingers are crossed. saying that will not happen. He better be in this fucking movie, and he better bring his A game to it, regardless of what I'm saying about him right now or his age. So, please.
Well, Chris, be prepared to cross streams, because we're going to cross streams with Mark Risman. We are going to do this thing. He is in it. I want to say he's in it, because I think they even filmed almost everything. It's almost all done.
Okay, good, so, good.
And he is confirmed to be in it, along with Sigourney Weaver, Ernie Hudson, Dan Aykroyd, Annie Potts.
Mm-hmm. Still not sure about Rick Moranis, though.
I want to see he is, but I'm not 100% sure. He may only have a slight, maybe a glorified cameo, or he might be in the whole thing. I don't know. It's like mum's the word on him.
Yeah.
Like, even more so than Bill Murray, for some reason. And I love me some Rick Moranis. I mean, he is great. I know Annie Potts is in it, and I know I think even an adult Oscar maybe even making an appearance as a part of like the new Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. But that's just a rumor as well. We don't know for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully it all goes well. You know, I mean, hopefully Jason Reitman is going to be doing the Lord's work here and make this worthwhile. I will say this, though. I hope somebody mentions... I remember one time we were kind of talking about this, like before all this, about how if they did do this follow-up, you know, because Harold Ramis is dead. Yeah. And I remember telling you that I was talking to somebody about this, and they were like saying, well, they would have to acknowledge his, you know, absence. And I'm certain someone would probably say, well, you know, if he's dead, you know, then where would his ghost be? And someone said... I don't know if it was me or somebody else that said, well, he would be smart enough to go to the other side, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, like, I'm hoping there's not going to be a silly sequence where they're going to try to recreate Harold Ramis as a ghost in this, and, you know.
I
hope not.
I think they'll acknowledge him
more
than once in the movie. I think it would be... Oh, kind of in poor taste if they try to bring him back as like a Slimer-esque.
I'm hoping they don't do that.
Some sort of entity like that. I think it's sometimes less is more. And
yeah.
I'd like to see something maybe like even just a small voiceover, like I'll see you on the other side kind of thing.
Yeah.
To the other Ghostbusters, or maybe even just to maybe even like Dan Aykroyd or Bill Murray just by themselves. It doesn't even have to be a whole casting, like just something where, you know, that we realize his spirit and his soul is at peace and he is happy and he's watching over, you know, his grandkids and, you know, them. It doesn't have to be this whole long drawn out, like, you know, silly CGI, you know, special effects kind of like thing, because there's going to be plenty of that, and I would expect nothing less. But I think to be more respectful to the actor, the writer, the creator, one of the creators of it. I think it'd just be a more of a classier thing to do.
Yeah.
But we shall see. I mean, I have a lot of confidence that he'll do the right thing.
Yeah. We'll see.
You know, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. And if I'm wrong, sue me. This podcast is free. So, you know, blood from a stone.
Yeah, that's true. So.
I can give you a nickel. anyway, Chris, I think we should start getting into the rest of the show.
Yes.
So with that, let's pause for a quick speakeasy commercial break, and then we'll roll that trailer for The Children from 2008. And we'll be right back after this with Professor's wonderful synopsis.
Hi, I'm Tim.
And I'm Katie.
And this is 60 Minutes.
No, it's not.
It isn't? Then what are we doing, jerk?
It's Men of Letters, bitch, a supernatural retrospective podcast.
Yes, so we'll gas up the old Impala and you'll ride shotgun with us as we cruise the highways and byways of America with Sam, Dean, and Baby.
We'll discuss every episode, every monster. We'll even look under your bed, in your closets for the supernatural.
Well, maybe not that last one, Katie. You never know what may be under there or in there, but be sure to tune in to Men of Letters over at the Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Where talk is cheap, and so are we.
So don't be a jerk or a bitch. Listen to Men of Letters, a supernatural retrospective podcast.
And we'll see you all down the road. And oh, you guys, don't forget to bring the pie.
This don't hit kids here, Jonah.
Fine. No, it's his latest trick. Anyone would think he likes the attention.
Them into this world.
They attacked me. Jonah, I think they're sick.
Now.
Oh my god, I love you both so much.
They will take you out.
I don't know.
The children.
Where's mommy?
And we're back. But hey, Chris, before we get into your synopsis, why do you think Santa's so jolly all the time?
Well, I'm going to assume he's had one eggnog too many, or the reason why he's so jolly is because he really likes the cocaine.
Well, Santa's so jolly all the time. It's because he knows where all the naughty girls live.
So that's where he gets his cocaine liver. Okay, thank you.
Yes. All right.
Gets that medicinal drip of the. Oh, never mind.
Oh my god. He likes to have his. He's giving out candy canes. They like them. Lick them, right?
Jesus. Is that going to be the subject for the next Kurt Russell, Santa? What was the name of that movie again?
Christmas Chronicles.
Yes, the Christmas Chronicles. You know, we now get to see him try to barge his way into a sorority house.
Or you have Mrs. Claus with Goldie Hawn.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Claus, I've got a candy cane for you. Step under my mistletoe.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he's got to... I got to head out to the Arctic to battle the alien from that movie.
Remember that movie in the snow that one time you did? The shapeshifter.
That's pretty good, though. Man.
What?
No, that's pretty good, though, the joke you had.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well,
okay, so Chris, why don't you take it away?
All right. Sir? All right, so we are talking about the movie The Children from 2008, directed by Tom Shanklin, written by Tom Shanklin, and based on a story by Paul Andrew Williams. Well, dear listeners, here we are again, another Christmas-themed holiday episode. I believe this movie mostly takes place during the New Year's, but hey, whatever, it doesn't matter. And to tell you the God's honest truth, you know, our previous entry, Red Christmas, still continues to leave a bad taste in our mouths. It was, without question, that lump of coal one does not want in their stocking. But that's what we got. And since then, I've held a grudge against Santa Claus, you know. When it comes to holiday-themed horror, yes, you'll discover there's only a handful of titles out there that live up to their expectations. You know, but then again, they all can't be winners. I mean, yes, for every good movie like the original Black Christmas, an average fare like All Through the House, you know, you get some mediocre stuff like Christmas Evil and pure dreck like the Star Wars Holiday Special. Well, okay, wait. That's not a horror movie, but watch it. It's quite the horror show, and it's still awful. So there.
It was pretty horrific.
Yeah. One of those, what were they thinking movies, you know? But so when it came down to setting this episode up, you know, we were a bit at the crossroads and wondered if there was something out there for the season that we haven't seen. And then, you know, the miracles happened. The lovely Timothy Kasda found a little British horror flick called The Children. I personally have never heard of this movie. But upon reading a little more about the film, we decided that this would be the one to tackle. So does this little effort make up for the last year's flaming hot garbage, or is this yet another lump of coal for THSP? Well, you're about to find out. So, The Children begins in the nondescript British countryside during the final days of December. We see a car driving down the lonely road. Inside the car is Elaine, played by Eva Burchill, and her new husband Jonah, played by Stephen Campbell Moore. Young daughter Casey, played by Hannah Taunton. And half-siblings Polly, played by William Hose, and Miranda, played by Eva Sayer. This particular family is spending New Year's with Elaine's sister Chloe, played by Rachel Shelley, and her husband Robbie, played by Jeremy Sheffield, and their two children Leah, played by Raphaela Brooks, and Nikki, played by Jake Hathaway. Yes, just one big happy family get-together for the holidays. However, the only one who is not too enthralled by this outing is Casey. She doesn't like Jonah very much and intends to sneak away with one of her friends when the timing is right. In the meantime, young Polly is beginning to feel rather ill, but parents Elaine and Jonah blame the whole thing on the long drive that they had. So, slowly but surely, the other young children begin to show signs of being ill, and eventually the kids take out their rage against their parents in very odd and uncomfortable ways, much to the dismay of Casey and her mother. So that's kind of like, you know, actually it's really a fairly straightforward, you know, story to describe The Children. Like I said, I've never seen this movie. And I actually, you know, I will say I did enjoy the movie for what it was. It wasn't bad. It was certainly, it is certainly in comparison to Red Christmas a step up.
Oh, got it. Yeah, a couple of steps up. Yeah. Like a full flight of stairs. Yeah. But yeah,
yeah,
it's not saying much.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not completely perfect. I have a problem with the ending of this movie. And I have also a problem about how these kids somehow get sick, but we'll get into that when we talk about that story. But I will say the movie kind of reminded me of this one horror movie from the 70s involving killer kids called Who Can Kill a Child from 1976. That's a very good movie too, and one day I think we'll tackle that one. When we will, not sure yet, but this movie, The Children, kind of reminds me of that film. And okay. Yeah, and but you know, as a whole, I thought the movie was all right. Like I said, it has some flaws here and there, but by and large, yes, certainly a much, much more step up than Red Christmas.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, so what did you think? I mean, before we get into the whole meat and potatoes of this whole thing, you know, I mean,
before, you know, you bestowed upon me the honor of saying that, you know, I picked this out, which I did, but I want to bring attention to it because a longtime listener of our show, Mervyn Stevenson, I believe.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, he made mention of it in one of our episodes many years ago.
And okay, all right.
I wouldn't say many years ago because we've only been on, it seems like we've been going on forever, but I want to say probably about 2 or 3 years ago. And so he said, hey, you know, because we were talking about what our favorite Christmas-themed horror movies were and if we had any, like, suggestions or something. I forget the question at that point exactly, but I did mention, you know, and he responded back with The Children. And that kind of stuck with me when I was, like, going through, like, the various, like, online, like, streaming services that I have. And this movie is currently available on Tubi, if you don't know, and it's for free, so you can watch it with commercials. And it doesn't detract from the movie at all. It's limited commercials. But so I posed a question on our Facebook page last Tuesday, I want to say, saying, did you love it or hate it? You know, we want to hear it, and your answers will possibly be read on our show. Well, Mervyn Stevenson did come back and said that if creepy kids are done right, then it's always a plus, and they are little evil shits. It's set in the winter with plenty of snow, which always makes it feel more secluded and cut off from the rest of the world. I liked it, but it took two watches through for him to, I guess, enjoy it. And I will agree with him on that because I watched it once. And then I want to say I watched it another time about a week ago because we were supposed to actually record this episode on December 11th, but, you know, life gets in the way.
And, yeah, I can't help it. I was tired.
Oh, dude, hey, I was tired. Honestly, it was basically we were both playing like a Russian roulette because I'm like, I was tired, but I was going to, like, you know, get ready to do it, but you had the synopsis.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Like, And like, and it's, it was kind of like, oh, Chris doesn't want to do it. Oh, bummer, but I'm not too pissed. I'm like, okay, it's fine.
Well, no, yeah, it was, but to be serious about that, yeah, I was very exhausted that day.
No, well,
I said to you, I think I texted you, I said, I don't think you want me falling asleep on your
show. And honestly, I'd probably hit the mute button myself trying to keep those Z's out away from the, you know, the audio.
Right.
But, hey, you know, that's what happens when you're an adult, you know? We try our best. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm like, well, Chris, I'm glad you pulled the trigger, because I'm like, I didn't know how I was going to sound that night because I was tired too. You know, we both work, we both have a lot of different responsibilities. It's, life gets in the way, and but we're here now. But anyway, so I watched that movie last Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever we were supposed to record. So I watched that movie, so it was fresh in my mind, and I kind of liked it better the second time around. I do know that, for me personally, there are some issues that we're going to talk about very, very shortly. But I did end up enjoying it a little bit more the second go around. So thank you, Merv, for your insight and for actually suggesting this film like 3 years ago. So
thanks, man. Yeah, I forgot you mentioned that too.
Well,
so long ago too. So
yeah, I think it was either, I want to say, our first or second Christmas special. Maybe it was our Black Christmas episode, which was probably our first Christmas episode. Or crap, I don't even remember what our first... No, our first Christmas episode was Krampus. But...
Well, hey, folks, if you can figure it out for us, please send in an email.
Honestly, it really doesn't matter. I remember us reviewing... Our first season, we watched the Krampus film that just came out, and we watched Rare Exports.
Oh, okay, yeah.
For the second season, we watched... we did the whole Black Christmas thing, I want to say. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Merv mentioned it. I remembered it when I was looking through things, and I just want to say thank you, and let's... Okay, Chris, take it away.
So the movie opens with the family arriving at the house of Chloe, the sister, and we're introduced to the main character Casey, who's the rebellious daughter. It's interesting too. This movie was made in 2008, and what was the phone that she was using? It was like an early,
it was a flip phone, right?
It was a flip phone. It wasn't a flip phone, but it was sort of like an early. It seems so long ago to us, but I would want to say it's like maybe an early BlackBerry or something. I could be wrong, but it was just the way how the texting came through. It looked a little different for the time.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah. No, so Casey, played by Hannah Toynton, is like, she's the sort of rebellious daughter. She really doesn't want to be there on this trip.
She doesn't like her stepdad.
Yeah, yeah. And at first... her stepdad Jonah, played by Stephen Campbell Moore, he at first seems like a reasonably okay guy in the opening sequence there. Later on we'll get to what he does that sort of makes us turn on that. But he seems like he's a relatively decent individual, and the mother is the mother. Elaine, she's kind of like, trying to make light of trying to like get everybody together, make light of everything. And then you've got the two kids, Pauline and Miranda, who, basically are just kids. And they arrive. And I will say, I like the setting very much because it's isolated in the countryside, but because it's taking place during like the final days of December, because I believe this does take place on like the peak towards New Year's Eve, I believe.
How Internet Movie Database said it was a Christmas film, but I think it's more of a it's more of a British film, but so they say holiday, so
yeah.
it's not necessary. I think it happens a few days after Christmas, but still part of the Christmas holiday.
So
we still see the lights. We still see, I think don't even the kids open presents. I want to say at one point they do.
I know that they were preparing a Christmas dinner, and
right.
And real quick, I noticed something that I never noticed before. I'm certain some people do this, but if you look very carefully when they're preparing the turkey, they're putting bacon slices on top of it.
Interesting.
Did you notice that? I mean, maybe I'm the only one to notice that, but I mean...
You probably did. You call another expert you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I tell you, I can cook a mean turkey. So, I mean,
turkey.
But... yes, but I just noticed that. That was very strange. I don't know. I'm certain there are some people that do that, but I'm just saying I found that very, very odd, you know, for my American tastes here. So...
But honestly, everything's better with bacon. So, you know, maybe I'll tell my wife next time because she does all the the turkey cooking in our house.
Yeah.
So we always put apples on the side and do all the other things. But bacon sounds actually not too bad.
Yeah. So I want you to go up to your wife, Christina, and I want you to say, "Hey, honey, you know, we watched this horror movie called The Children.
And we're going to try something.
Yeah, we're going to try something out. No, don't worry, honey. It's not going to involve the kids. But there was a scene in there that Chris told me about where they were cooking the turkey and they were putting bacon strips on top of it. So why don't we try that out? See, and then she looks at you like with a sigh of relief and goes, what were we going to suggest to you? That, you know, we were going to cook the children? I mean, come on. What kind of person do you think I am? So anyway, but I really like this setting, of the fact that it's winter. It's like basically everything is snow. You can see the icicles like hanging from all the trees and everything. It's just really cold. You get that impression visually.
Right. There's definitely no, when it comes to the snow, there's no CGI. This was definitely shot during the winter in the countryside in England. My thing is, was this somebody's actual house or did they rent this place and they all went in there?
Like, I think from what I can recall, I believe Chloe, the sister, and her husband Robbie, they do own the house.
They own the house.
I believe they mentioned that in the film because they were kind of like thinking themselves. You know, I think I recall there being a scene where they were like, sort of like, wow, you know, you got this big house all the way out here, and you know, the middle of nowhere.
They were the one that were trying to homeschool their kids, right?
Yeah, they were talking about that too at one point. They were thinking about homeschooling the kids, so and then of course we get a scene where little Paulie starts like vomiting, or at least he's sick, which is supposed to be the setup.
Fuck that kid.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I'm kidding.
But it's supposed to be the setup of what's gonna be happening later on in the movie because you know he's sick, and the film tries to give out little hints that it's his illness that's going to spread and cause the other kids to get ill. And, you know, I have to say, first off, it's called The Children, so I think it's no surprise that it involves the kids being, you know, killers, quote-unquote. But,
here's the thing. If they really want to do a survey, they have the parents do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, go on.
Well, they'd be called the parents, yes. So, but, no, they're trying to set this up where Paulie character is sick, and he will be eventually the one that's sort of transferring the illness to the other children. But what kind of sort of is flawed about it is that we don't quite get an idea of what it is about this illness that causes them to, you know, lose their mind, in a way lose their minds and become who they are. You know, I wonder if it's even because they're ill, you know, so it sort of does feel like it's up in the air. So
there are a lot of things that I could, that I was thinking about. Well, is it a supernatural virus? Is it something, you know, in the air? Like, I mean, because they don't make mention of it. It's not like some sort of like bomb went off. Like when we do the zombie movies, there's always some sort of like atomic something that a reactor or some sort of fucking missile or whatever. I don't know. So there's always something that sets it off. You don't understand exactly what's going on, and that's what kind of it's kind of like. A plus and a minus at the same time.
Yeah, it is. It's like, especially when we get to the big ending, because I was a little disappointed in how it ends because I felt like it was like it built up to that climax and then it was just sort of like it sort of petered out and it basically ended in the way that I kind of get tired of these types of endings where they're so inconclusive, where it just feels like they just decided to stop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like they almost ran out of money.
Yeah, or at the very least, I think I've said this before, they took the final episode of The Sopranos approach.
Spoilers, I haven't seen it yet.
I know, but still, if you've seen it, you know, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But it just feels like, you know, like, and that's become a common thing now, is like almost every horror movie, or they try to do that whole inconclusive ending thing. And it's like, well, you know, well, that kind of works sometimes, but not all the time.
But did you see the ending of the reboot of or the remake of blah, 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 blah. I think it was Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, well, yeah, the remake of Dawn of the Dead. Yeah,
with
yeah.
Sarah Polley and everything.
Yeah,
you know, that movie was great. I really enjoyed that remake. And then they kind of did what you said, where if you watch all the way through, like, the credits, it's a very, like, open-ended, like, oh, crap, well, like, yeah. I guess they're fucked anyway kind of
right,
way.
Right, like, they were trying to set themselves up for a sequel, and I'm kind of sitting there going,
but,
you know.
But maybe not.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, don't set yourself up for a sequel. Never assume that you were going to do a sequel. Because don't forget, what was that one movie we reviewed involving the it was part of the horror comedy. I'm forget. Was it Infestation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the ending on that?
Yeah. Where I remember. Just, I fucking hated it.
I know. Like, me too. Yeah. Because it was just because they assumed they were going to be able to do a sequel.
Well, yeah. Because they signed a 3-picture deal.
Yeah. I know. So, yeah. But I would have been like, no, don't assume it. Even if you sign the deal. Never assume it. You know?
I mean, at least shoot an alternate ending where, in case it doesn't happen, you have another fucking thing to edit in there. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
anyway, getting back to this movie, what I will say is that I really liked that Polly's character was banging the xylophone, and it was just super freaking creepy. You know, like he's just sitting there just banging on it, like. Okay, he's a kid, you know, what, maybe 3, maybe, but just the way they shot him, just banging on it, and just his facial expressions were just so goddamn creepy. And then they mentioned Jinx, the cat, goes missing. Now, I don't remember ever seeing the cat actually on film, but he is mentioned, right? He's mentioned for sure, but I don't remember ever seeing him on film.
Yeah, you know, I remember seeing him on film, but what happened was is that what's interesting is...
Or Jinxie or whatever.
Yeah, Jinxie. I do recall seeing the cat on film, but what I found very interesting was there was a moment where the cat got outside.
Yes.
But we never saw the cat go outside, and we never got an indication that the cat got outside, and I was thinking to myself, how did the cat get outside? And then eventually there's a shot where one of the parents goes inside the house, and you see the cat door. And I was like, that explains it.
They're emptying out all the wine bottles from the...
Yeah. Time. Which, by the way, that was a lot of wine bottles they were emptying.
Well, there were 6 adults, you know.
I know, but... But they didn't sound trashed.
No.
They didn't sound bombed. I have to say, there's no way that even if they were that bombed, they wouldn't be emptying the wine bottles outside.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I was also looking at, like, what, they got champagne bottles in there too? They got Brut and everything. What the hell's going on? Also, there's another thing in this movie where there's actually like one or two scenes. The first scene between Casey and her uncle Robbie.
Yeah, which is, I don't know. I think they're trying to make more of him what was actually there.
Yeah, I thought that too, because they were trying to make it look like maybe he was sort of the
creepy uncle.
The creepy uncle.
That's a fucker, you know?
Yeah. And I never, at all in this movie, you know, I never felt that he was that character, even though they were kind of sort of trying to allude to him being that way.
I felt he was more like the laid-back, like, cool guy. Not like the guy who was trying to get into her pants. And I didn't like the fact that when Casey was talking to her friend, that she's like, "Oh, why don't you let your just horny uncle fuck you?" You know, I'm like,
"Yeah," because then it's like, "Well," and that seemed like that.
I know, that's just really weird. And the thing is, I never got that vibe off him. Like, he was actually trying to, get in her pants, you know, per se.
But that's another thing too. You mentioned that her friend on the phone made that comment, and I'm thinking to myself, "Well, what made her friend think that?" You know, yeah, I mean, what was the connection there? You know, I mean,
a possible previous conversation where she's like, "Yeah, my creepy ass uncle or whatever," but he seemed all pretty chill. I'm like, he like gave her some weed. They were just smoking in the greenhouse.
Later on, we'll talk about that scene too. Yeah, but the reason why I'm mentioning this is this scene is because this is when, you know, Casey wants to use the internet.
She just wants to make a phone call.
Make a phone call. But the only way to get good connection is outside by the woodpile.
Here's the thing, is they did have a landline, but apparently that it was only used for the adults. But I'm like, I don't know. He showed her, so the cool uncle that apparently wanted to fuck her, showed her where to go to make a phone call, where you could get decent cell service. But there was also some, things that were kind of brought up, but not, explored more. Like, Casey said that, she had a small tattoo on her, on her belly, saying that, it was a small little fetus, and she was the abortion that got away. So apparently, her folks or her mother at one point wanted to abort her or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I didn't totally... honestly get that, because if she were going to be aborted, you would have been aborted, but that's either here nor there. And then she's talking on her phone to Lisa, and there's another thing, we were talking about how the kids are getting sick, right?
Yeah.
And this is what stuck out to me. They did a flash frame of a farmhouse, a picture, right? And they had three kids feeding a horse. I'm like, it was an old-timey photo. Do you remember seeing that, Chris? It was a painting.
I don't recall seeing that. I mean, it might be in there, but I don't recall seeing
that. It's right after, I want to say, it's right when the wife and the stepfather are trying to get Randy. You're trying to get together, and then they show a quick snippet of the kids in this old-timey painting. I'm like, what is that? What significance does that have in the overall story arc? Because they're feeding, there's three kids feeding an apple to a horse on a dusty road. And then get this, when Casey's talking to her friend, and she's supposed to be picking her up, they say that Lisa on the phone mentions picking up Danny, who's feeling sick, but they'll head out over to her and pick her up later that afternoon or early evening. And I want to know, was this something that's overall sickness? You know what I'm saying? Because all the kids are sick. Now her friend Danny is, her friend Lisa's friend Danny is sick. Was this something bigger? Maybe I was reading too much into it.
I don't know. I mean, it could be.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either.
My notes were the second time watching it through, because I'm like, the kids are sick and they're complaining and stuff like that. And adults are freaking just so not like how any adult I know would respond to their kid being sick. But that's just me. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah, they kind of portray the parents in this film as being probably a little more on the laissez-faire kind of attitude towards their children. Because there's one moment in the film where Jonah gets upset at one of the kids and begins to just sort of lose his shit and spank one of them.
Yeah.
and of course, Robbie's like, no, we don't do that around here, I mean, it's... Right. So, I mean, the way how they act, it feels like they're a little more, I guess you could say, liberal towards the way how they want their kids to act. So no, they choose... Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's like the way you feel like the way how they're acting towards their kids being sick... It seems like they don't have quite the widest of concern for
right. So here's the thing. Without you being a parent, obviously, and me being a parent, I'm like, and all these adults, supposed adults, having children under the age of 10, other than Casey and, I believe it's Casey's the only one that's 16, 17 at this point. Everybody else is maybe 10 or 11 and under.
Yeah.
So all these kids start to complain that they're feeling ill. You think even just one of the adults would have a thermometer or some ibuprofen or some something, because we never leave the house. When we go on trips, My son's allergic to peanuts and tree nuts, so we always have an EpiPen. We always have like ibuprofen. We always have like children's cough medicine just in case. And this is just for a two or three day trip to Chicago, not for a freaking trip in the countryside where there's fucking absolutely nothing you can do. I mean, you can go to a fucking Walgreens in Chicago. You can go to a fucking Walgreens in Minnesota, and it's fucking fine. You're going out in the middle of goddamn nowhere, and you don't bring a thermometer. You don't bring any kind of medicine. You don't, you know, even the kids are like a washcloth, like, you know, warm or cold. I'm like, it just seemed very like they didn't care. They didn't. They thought they were making it up. I'm like, and then there's one scene where the one sister that's wants to homeschool her kids is talking to the blonde woman. I forget her name, but she's the one married to the step.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's Chloe, the sister, played by Rachel Shelley, who's talking to Elaine.
Yeah,
Chloe's the one that wants to do the homeschooling. So.
Right, so Elaine gets all pissy at Chloe, saying that, oh, you brought, you know, I think it was Polly or whoever was car sick here, and you know how my kids are susceptible to being sick. I'm like really? And this is your fucking house, and you don't have any goddamn medicine? You don't even say, hey, let's give so-and-so some medicine. Let's, you know, as a parent, that just does not fucking compute. It makes no goddamn sense. Like, one person, I'm like, I could see maybe one or two parents, but there should be like a moral majority that say, hey, maybe we give, you know, little Lisa or little Johnny, you know, some medicine and see if they feel better. But there's nothing. It's like, oh, well, whatever. It's que sera, sera. I'm like, that doesn't fly. I'm
well,
like,
anything to advance the plot forward.
I get it. But I'm like, as a parent, it's like, are you that dickish? Are you that fucking hard-headed that you don't just say, hey, here, put a thermometer in your mouth. Hey. Give you some ibuprofen. Hey, they could still have this plot line advance, but at least the parents are fucking doing something.
No, I agree. Now, I agree.
Right now, just making the parents looking like a fucking complete jackasses and idiots.
I agree. It feels like the parents in this film are kind of very underwritten. They're very, they're kind of just there as, you know, just to serve as props. I'm not saying that the performances aren't good. The performances are decent.
But it just
feels like the way how they act, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of motivation for what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and here's the thing. And for instance, like my sister came up with my nephews. My older nephew Xander got a little under the weather, not like completely sick. But guess what? I mean, yeah, we weren't in the middle of the countryside. We were here at my house. But guess what? I had a thermometer, gave him some ibuprofen. Guess what? He was fine. Bada bing, bada boom. I'm just saying, someone somewhere along the fucking line's got to have something.
Yeah.
And especially the sister Lisa's house. Like, fuck, come on, Lisa. Fuck you.
Well,
step up.
But that aside. So we eventually get the. There's a scene in the film where, like, the kids are slowly starting to get ill, and you see one of them, like, kind of wipe their nose of, like, what looks like snot, and sort of wipe it over on their pillow, with perhaps one of the most over-exaggerated sound effects I've ever heard. Sounds like a... Yeah, I know. Did you hear that, too?
Yeah,
like, that was a little...
Like you're drinking soup, yeah.
I know, yeah, that was a little much. I mean, they could have toned that one down in the sound mix pretty well. But it gets the point across that something weird's happening.
Well, then she's holding her dolly that her dolly says like mama or dada or whatever it is.
And there's a very weird payoff with that too later on, which we'll get to. But so now not much really goes on in like the first I'd say 30 minutes. Not saying it's boring, it's not. It's just not much crazy mayhem happens yet. You know we're basically. We see the kids playing, and of course, Casey, the daughter, is not really very enthused about spending time with the family. Jonah, the stepfather, he's trying to get Robbie to participate in this very strange business dealing involving Chinese medicine, because he's studying Mandarin, he said. And it seemed kind of odd because we don't really quite get an idea of why he's trying to get Robbie to invest in this. You know, Casey kind of blurted out that maybe that it's one of his quote unquote schemes you know, to get into, you know, to get some money for this thing. But we never, I mean, there's not a lot of indications that this whole thing is just a wash that he's doing, or if it's just, or if he's very serious about it. It just feels like, you know, kind of innocuous, you know, small talk for his character. Well,
I mean, they got to give every adult something to do. But I'm it's just so boring.
yeah. It's not. It's. I mean, like, well, I wouldn't say boring. Just not completely interesting. I mean, like I said, like, well, no. I mean, boring and not are two different things. What I'm saying is that it's not interesting, but it's not like we're sitting here counting the time down. That's what it's like when you're bored.
Maybe boring was a little bit too harsh of a word, but it just felt like he needed to say something. Yeah. He's got his books here, but here's the thing: is that okay? So we see Polly first get affected. Then it was Miranda. Miranda's the one that wiped her nose, and then Miranda's the one that actually Polly's still acting distant as fuck. But Polly is just banging on his fucking xylophone, just making a complete. You know, he's just being annoying.
Just being a little bastard. Come on.
but Miranda is the one you need to focus on, because she starts out as like this minor character, but as the film progresses, she becomes more and more integral part of the plot.
Yeah, and she gets weirder and weirder too.
Yeah, weirder and weirder, because it's just you see her doing things. You see like these flash frames in the movie. And things happen. I don't know how far you. We don't want to skip too far in advance, Chris. But you know, there is just so much weird shit that's going on with her, and almost how she's like. I want to say almost like a telepath thing, maybe, or she has some sort of telepathy.
Maybe it's just they're trying to like use little bits of flash frames that we're going to see later on. I wouldn't say telepathy, but just...
Maybe some sort of Jedi mind trick?
Or some kind of staccato editing effect that, you know, has become so commonplace now. Sort of like give an idea as to what's going to happen next, you know.
Anyway, there's something wrong with Miranda.
yeah, basically. And there's a scene where they're having their New Year's dinner. And... First, Chloe points out that Casey has the tattoo on her stomach that she showed Robbie.
Right.
And of course, you know, Casey told Robbie to please, Uncle Robbie, please don't, you know, tell my mom about this, and he said he wouldn't. But of course,
apparently he did.
Well, his wife did. Because remember, his wife came in when they were in the greenhouse smoking pot, and she apparently was able to see that, and she decides to sort of mention it, but she didn't. But see, I think she genuinely didn't know that she wasn't supposed to say anything about that. So,
right.
But and then of course, all the kids begin to start acting, you know, like crying and acting up at the table.
Yeah,
and I believe. It was Miranda. I believe it was the Miranda character that scratches Chloe's face, or was it Lisa?
Because Lisa's like, "Oh, look, Miranda, why don't you eat like a couple more Brussels sprouts and some peas, and I'll give you a gold star." I'm like, "Fuck you and your gold star!"
Yeah,
like, give me a break. And Miranda just like, scratches her or does something, and then I want to say one of the is it Nikki or
Nikki? Yeah, Nikki.
She goes for like the butcher knife that's like. On like one of the side tables, and they were able to. One of the adults was able to catch her and tell her to put that down. But she had the butcher knife in her hand, and this weird look in her eye. And then you get those flash frames that you were talking about.
Yeah, and then of course there's a scene. So you know, it takes a while for it to really kick in the gear, but then we get the one scene that happens where it finally begins to set the wheels in motion, and that's when Robbie goes on the sled.
But there was a one before that where I believe where Polly was up with the sled and they were bringing out the heat.
Yeah.
But like a foreshadowing.
But they made that look like it was like, you know, sort of like a regular accident. You know, like
right.
What happens with Robbie? It comes off a little more intentional.
Oh, yeah.
But
at that point, Polly gets a spanking because you know he pushed the sled into one of I think Lisa's. Legs or something.
Yeah, anyway. The sled hit Lisa's legs because she was bringing out like a like a tray, some tea, yeah.
Yeah.
And it falls on Jonah because he's trying to go over his plan, his business plan to Robbie. So
for his herbal stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway. So basically, I'm saying that scene is a foreshadowing of to what's to come. But continue. I'm sorry.
So Robbie is outside trying to like entertain the kids, and he gets on one of the sleds and he gets on the sled prone position, I believe. It's on your stomach, and head first. And he goes down.
Never head first. Never anything head first.
Well, yeah, unless you happen to not run into
a wagon with
some sharp tool sticking out on the side of it, you know. Whereas Robbie, he obviously did not heed the warning that we're giving to him, and he runs into it and he cuts the side of his head, and unfortunately, it kills him too.
Yeah, that was a very decent special effect. I mean, well, a special effect, but also a practical effect.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say special effect because that's usually when you say CGI or when you say special effect, you think CGI, but a very practical, decent effect.
Makeup effect, yeah.
See, here's the thing, and that's why I never, ever, ever go head first when I'm sledding. I've been sledding 1,000 times, I've never gone head first. Or very rarely. And I have a sled like what Robbie was using. Always feet first. You know what? It'll fucking cut up your legs, but you won't die. Anyway, go on.
No, and then, yeah, you're right. No, so, and then there's this. So, basically, Robbie's dead, and they're calling, trying to call 911, right, trying to get, like, the ambulance, but of course, they're being told that it's going to take an hour for the cops to get there, or somebody to get there.
So here's the thing. Now, watching it twice, yeah, so this guy is, like, critically injured. I mean, he is, like, dying here. He's not, what happened is he doesn't die right away. He, like, bleeds out, like, over the course of, like, some time here, on film, at least, because he's still kind of conscious when his wife comes out there and, like, is trying to cradle him. But he dies relatively quickly, but he's not dead right away. Right. So they call the police. They call the emergency management team, whatever it is. They call 911, and yeah, they tell them that there's some sort of snowstorm or some sort of like road blockage or something like that. But I'm like looking at the whole movie, and I'm like thinking, there's no snowstorm. I don't see a storm. I don't see any kind of like impending doom that would lead me to believe that no emergency vehicles could get through. I mean, I get them being out in the middle of nowhere. That's fine, but I didn't see anything as a viewer that say, "Hey, like nobody can get to you within a certain amount of time." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then it's brought up again when after he dies, and he's like, "Yeah, we just talked to you 30 minutes ago," and the person on the phone's like, "Well, even the emergency management team needs, you know, time to get through, and it'll be at least another half an hour or hour." I'm like, really? I'm like, it's sunshine out. There's like no goddamn storm. I'm like, look, if you're gonna say that there's some sort of fucking road closure, show a road closure. Show something like a boulder falling down in the middle of nowhere where that's the only road in or out, or show some sort of snowstorm. Show something like with Krampus. Like we watched Krampus a few years ago. Krampus, I get that. There's this fucking supernatural snowstorm that comes in out of nowhere and fucking covers everything. There's actually like radio and TV things saying, you know, we almost got a media blackout and there's like snow everywhere. We can't get to anybody. This, there's like, what? Nothing? I don't get it.
It feels like a plot device in a slasher movie. Yeah.
I get that.
But
it's got to be executed more. It's got more better. Boy, I'm sorry, my son.
It's got to be executed better. It's got to be executed with a little more finesse than what we're getting
like,
here.
If you're going to say that something's broken, fucking show me it's broken. Show me a storm coming. Show me something that tells me that this poor schlub who's bleeding out on the snow, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I want more, that there needs to be more said for this. I mean, this guy is dying and dead finally, and you're telling me it's going to be another 30 minutes? This is not a fucking pizza. Like,
well, no, but you're right though. It's very, it's the setup on that's kind of off. I would have I would have totally found it more believable if their phone lines were dead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Some random tree branch. You know what? Some random tree branch in the middle of nowhere fucking collapses on the only phone line going to the fucking farmhouse. That is more believable. And the poor chick that has to go out, like, it has to hike, 30 or 40 yards the opposite way to get a decent cell reception, makes sense. You've already got it built in.
Well.
Anyway.
No, but you're right, though. It's very odd. So, so basically, Robbie's dead. The kids have ran off. But, of course, Elaine goes outside and discovers that Robbie's body is missing all of a sudden. And she then sees that there's a trail of blood on the snow outside leading to this yellow tent. She's going to look inside, and then she sees something, but we don't see what it is yet. And then she hears her young son, Paulie, and she tries... He's crying on the...
Monkey bars.
Yeah. So she tries to go get him, and she's wearing high heels... High-heeled boots, by the way.
And here's the thing. Anybody, I mean, you don't even have to be a horror aficionado like we are. You don't crawl up monkey bars. This kid's, like, inching back. And she's like, come here, Polly. Polly keeps inching back. I'm like, something bad's going to fucking happen, like, 2 miles before it even happens. I mean, that's just 2 miles of bad fucking road.
Well, yeah, certainly something bad does happen.
Well, of course it does happen, because she's a stupid bitch.
Yeah, she gets her foot, she gets the heel of her foot caught, and she flies backwards, and then she basically breaks her leg, like, the bone... sticks right out. That was very effective. That actually made me go, "Oh, jeez,"
super gruesome. But you know what? As a parent, if I see my kid up on top, I'm not gonna climb up. I'm just gonna stand at the bottom, not climb up and chase him. Stand at the bottom and say, "Come to me." Problem solved.
Well, moron. She didn't clearly hear you when you were yelling at the TV.
Oh yeah. No, she didn't.
That would have been a perfect, like, 42nd Street Theater experience. As soon as she does it, you go, "No, you don't go over there, lady. Don't go up there. Don't follow your kid. Don't.
Hey, you know what? Neither do the Chicago Bears when I watch them play on television either. They don't hear me when I scream, "Don't do that!"
Well, you shouldn't bother, because they don't listen to anybody.
No. Whatever.
I'm sorry. Look, real quick, I understand that since you are a Chicago native, you have to root for them, but I have to tell you,
I choose to root for them.
You choose to root for them.
I choose to get my heart broken every goddamn day.
Oh, well, you gotta quit doing that, dude. Sometimes you just gotta. It's like what Dave Rodriguez says. You can't. You're a glutton for punishment.
Dave has no room to talk, because Dave's a diehard Bears fan. You know what his second team is? The fucking New York Giants, and they fucking suck just as bad as the Bears, if not more. So
yeah, but like, which one has the biggest losing streak, though?
Probably the Giants. Well, the Bears did well last year. The Giants sucked for the past few years. I'm like, the Giants had a couple of Super Bowls
left. So you're kind of saying it's like, close to being 50-50, almost?
I don't know a whole lot about the Giants, like the history of the New York Giants. I do know a ton of history about the Chicago Bears, and I do know a ton of history about the Packers, and the Packers actually knocked us out of any kind of playoff contention just yet. 2 days yesterday, because this is still Monday night, and it was Sunday that it happened. And I'm still pissed, because I believe the official still, gave the nod a couple times to the Packers instead of the Bears, when it should have been Bears ball. It was a fumble. It doesn't matter if you're not a Bear, if you're not a football fan. It doesn't matter. Just realize the officials fucking screwed the Bears at least twice in the fucking game. Anyway,
but you know what though, the Packers always somehow manage to beat the Bears. Yeah. I don't know what it is they do. I don't know what the magic is.
Yeah, my point being said is the Bears lost and we're out of the playoffs. Yeah, and basically what had happened is so the Packers have had two great quarterbacks over the past 35 years or so, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, who's currently playing. Right, perfect. Right, all right? So. Packers in that time span so far have won two Super Bowls, only two. So now the Bears, on the other hand, since I was a child, and the Bears and the Packers and the whole basically NFL switched from like these different championship brackets to one big Super Bowl bracket or whatever playoff thing. Bears have won one in 1985/1986, and they've been to the Super Bowl in 2007. So the Bears have won one Super Bowl, and the Packers have won two. Packers like to think that they're so much better than everybody else, but in fact, they've only won one more Super Bowl than the Bears. So, fuck y'all. But anyway.
So in other words, you know, the Packers continue to win, and the Bears continue to suck a dick, basically.
Sometimes, but fuck you very much, Chris.
Sorry, I just I gotta tell you, every time they play, every time the Bears play, and I hear someone go, "Yeah, I watched a game last night," and I said to somebody, I said this today to somebody, I said, "Let me guess, the Bears lost, didn't they?" And he goes, "Yeah, they did." And it's
hey,
like, yeah.
You know, last year, okay, so last year the Bears split the series with the Packers. They swept the Minnesota Vikings and they swept Detroit Lions. So last year they won a division and they went on. They won a division. So, and this year, not so much. They swept the Lions. We still got one more. We beat the Vikings. We still have one more game with the Vikings, and we lost to the Packers both times. So yes, it sucks, but what the fuck are you gonna do? I'm a Bears fan and a Cubs fan. I'm used to losing.
Yeah.
but I fucking hate it. And you know what? We need to get back on track with the actual movie.
All right. Anyways, so yes, so
where were we?
So yeah, we're back to basics here. So Elaine gets her leg broken, and then she crawls into the green. No, I'm sorry. Casey, the daughter, finds her and takes her to the greenhouse. And then all of a sudden, the kids are like throwing rocks at the windows and everything,
breaking the glasses.
And then little Pauly manages to crash his way inside there. And at one point, you know, because Pauly's sort of like attacking, even though his actions are like very childlike, so it sort of gives the impression that maybe Pauly, is intending to attack with, you know, to kill the mother, or is just acting strange, you know. But there's a shot where...
Does he want to hug the mother or stab the mother?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But there's a shot where, like, Casey, like, pushes the son up against the... Like a desk. She throws him. And the kid still manages to get up.
I think something even lands on top of him, like another, like, shelf.
Yeah. And the kid still gets up.
It's still coming. And, like, and finally, I think she, like, throws him on top of some, like some glass shards, I want to say.
Yeah, like a giant shard of glass that's sticking up, and he falls onto it. And that worked too, because you didn't get to see it go through the kid, but it worked effectively.
Yeah.
But so then, at one point, Chloe, the sister, wants to go find her two kids, Nikki and Leah, who are still outside.
Uh-huh.
So she goes outside to go get them. And she eventually gets killed by the two of them. Do you remember how she gets killed? It was actually very effective too.
Her character annoyed me like the most out of all of them.
She was kind of useless. So
she's like, "Oh, not my children. They're fantastic. They're great. Whatever." I'm like, "Yeah, fuck you. They're not." and she goes out there looking for Nikki and Leah, and I think she comes upon. I want to say it's Leah, and Nikki sneaks up behind her, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know. Yeah, she comes across one of them, and the other one shows up to sort of give like a shock effect. Like, you know, they're gonna gonna kill her, but then it turns out now they're not gonna kill her yet.
almost Jurassic Park like. Chris, why don't you tell me what happens after that?
Oh well, one of them pulls on Mommy's earrings, and
rips them off.
Yeah, and then one of them takes a little Crayola pencil, which just happens to be outside in that location, by the way.
And
stabs her right in the eye, and you see it go right through. It was actually very effective. It goes by very quick, but, you know...
What color was the Crayola
pencil? Oh, it was blue. It was blue.
Blue. The color of her eyes.
Yeah. So that's how she meets her end. Yeah. And then, at one point... Casey you know, notices that little Miranda is acting very weird throughout this whole time.
Right,
and then
they're back in the house, right? I think she's on the couch right now.
Yeah, her mom Elaine is on the couch. They made like a makeshift cast for her. It's like two pieces of wood with like
a splint.
So then. But Miranda's acting like real weird. Like there's a scene where Casey runs it like slowly follows her into a room, and Miranda's sitting on the phone saying, you know, here Jinxie. Then she starts meowing like a cat. It was so weird looking. It was so odd. And then Casey then attacks her and tries to kill her. And then Jonah steps in, the stepfather, and then literally throws Casey, I believe, against a desk or something, or she hits her head. And then basically, Jonah decides to just abandon Elaine and Casey. You know, he locks Casey in the room. He leaves. He basically just like throws Elaine against the couch and says, you know, like, I'm through with you or whatever. I'm going to leave you. And then he's walking away, and then Miranda walks up to her and it says something to her like "I love you" or "goodbye" or "good luck" or something,
something like that. And she says Jonah's going to go for help.
Yeah. And she says goodbye, and she's like, "What?" And then all of a sudden, Miranda takes the splints off of her.
Yeah,
I actually laughed at that because as horrible as that was to her, what she did, the way how she pulled that off magnificently. And then Miranda gets in Jonah's car, and they drive off, leaving them behind.
Yeah, Jonah's like, I'm going to go get help. I'm going to go see what's going on.
No, he didn't say he's going to get help.
Oh, he didn't say
that? No, he never did. He basically was just leaving them. Like he said.
I thought he said, you stay here. I thought there was something where he said, you guys stay here, and I'm going to go find out, or something. I thought he was going to try to be more heroic. I thought it was more heroic than that, because he takes Miranda with him, and he's like, We're gonna help you. Yeah, Casey, you stay here with what's her name? The mother. Not Elaine. Is it Elaine? No, Elaine's already dead.
Yeah, I believe so. So yeah, Elaine's dead. So
yeah.
There's not much that can be done for her.
Right. No, who's the one on the couch though?
Oh, it's the mother. What's
her? So it's Casey, the teenager, and the mother, and Miranda and Jonah. Miranda and Jonah go apparently to try to get to the main road to get help. Because
but that's later. That's later. No.
I'm sorry.
So basically, Jonah takes Miranda with him, and they drive away, leaving Casey locked in the room and Elaine, the mother, on the couch by herself.
Without the splint,
yeah. Uh-huh. And then eventually Nikki and Leah come in. And,
oh, they do, yes.
Yeah. And then, of course, Elaine is trying to crawl up the stairs, and she makes it to the door, and Casey is able to, like, you know, break the door open so she can kind of get through. Yeah. And the two kids, Nikki and Leah, are going to try to, you know, kill the mom.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Casey grabs Nikki and shoves his neck into this big, you know, a splinter through the door. It was very effective, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they kind of walk past Leah.
Leah looks like she's scared out of her mind. But so Casey and Elaine get in their car, and they drive away. And then they find Jonah dead in his car. Because
not in the car. They find Jonah's car.
They find Jonah's car, but they find him dead, I believe, at one point.
She walks down to like away from the car because she realized that something's wrong.
Yeah,
and there's a blood trail, but they find Jonah buried in some sort of shallow grave,
the snow was covering his you're right. He wasn't buried, but his snow was covering his body. You can see his head, his face through it. So and then at one point Miranda's going to try to kill Casey, and Elaine decides to run over Miranda.
pins her between two cars. Now here's the thing that really got me. It's because we see Casey down there finding Jonah, and then we see Casey coming back, but then we see all these children come around.
Yeah,
like I'm like, is the land haunted? Because, or is it some sort of children?
Well,
kind of thing?
I think what they were trying to insinuate was that whatever this disease is, it's spreading somehow, and it's affecting all the other children. So it's sort of leaving it, that the kids are being infected, and then there's also the possibility that her daughter, the daughter Casey, might become affected too at one point,
because she
starts vomiting. And she starts getting sick, and she looks like she's about to lose her mind.
Right.
And then, of course, the movie ends with them getting in a car together and driving off, but they have no...
And her looking very pale and very
sick.
Yeah.
But I don't like the way how it ends, too, because I feel like we never find out what's going on. We don't even know if these other kids that we see that appear have killed off their family in, like, another town. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we never get that, and I feel disappointed by that. I feel like there needed to be something besides that ending.
Right.
And and to go back to another movie I mentioned before earlier, the 1976 film Who Can Kill a Child, which I feel this movie sort of owes a little bit of credit to that film. You know, that film, not to give that film away, but that film ends with, you know, basically the killer kids killing everybody on an island, and then they get on a boat and they're going to head off to the mainland and continue to spread their disease that they have that they're going to cause other kids to kill. But they make it quite clear in the dialogue what's going on and why they're doing this. You know what I'm saying? This film doesn't do that, and it's very, very it's very unrewarding to the viewer, basically.
Well, it's vague and it's very open-ended. I'm like, basically, because when I saw the kids going around, I'm like, are they ghosts? Is this a ghost sickness? Is this a haunted land? Is it what's going on? I'm like, because obviously it's something that's infecting the kids and possibly killing them as well, if not being killed by parents or other things. But I'm like, Is it Children of the Corn kind of thing? Is it without the leader? I don't know. Like it's so bizarre, because I'm like, if you're looking at like a George Romero movie, if you're looking at like any other zombie movie or ghost movie, you get some sort of like kind of idea. Like there was like we mentioned, there was like some atomic blast going off. There was some sort of like a government shenanigans. I don't know, something going on to make people or kids the way they are.
Yeah.
This I don't know. Like I thought it was like a supernatural ghost sickness at one point. I thought it was like a haunted land. I'm like, I'm going like all supernatural from the TV show stuff, like thinking like all these different like film lore thing, like American lore stuff. I'm like, I just don't know what to make of it. You know, I'm like,
It's a very, very inconclusive ending, and it's disappointing that it goes that road, because for some of its flaws, like I said, it's not a bad movie. It's actually
it's
an enjoyable movie. It's just I feel like the ending could be a lot more than what we got, and it's slightly disappointing because of that. But at the same time, it's an all right movie. I didn't dislike it at all. I think it's all right. So
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it. At the end of the day, I watched it twice, and I liked it. I give it a thumbs up. I wish there was more explanation to certain things. And my only gripe is the way the parents acted when their kids first started getting sick. I'm like, other than that, I'm like, I think it still could have been a very effective horror movie if the parents still acted in a more more reasonable, more parental way. I mean, I think it'd be even more effective because you'd feel more sympathetic towards the parents trying to help their kids while they're on vacation and still not succeeding. That's how I feel. But again, I may be a little jaded on that. I feel like I like having like an open end to a certain degree, but there's way too many. The way they left it, way too many questions and not enough answers.
Yeah, so. And I feel that's what affects it the most. So, but besides that, yeah, it's a fairly decent little movie. I recommend it. I think it's worth checking out at least to see what it's about. So, I don't really have much else to say. I think we've exhausted our criticisms as much as we could on this title. So,
I believe we have too. And I just have one fun fact for the episode. This was nominated for a 2009 Fright Meter Award for Best Horror Movie that year.
Ooh.
So that was kind of cool. I mean, I give it a thumbs up. Chris, what's your final rating? Thumbs up for this?
I'll give it a thumbs up. I mean, with the exception of the ending, which I completely despise, but everything else is all right. Yeah. So.
I mean, a thumbs up just means you liked it, but you didn't love it. I mean, obviously, you'd say if you absolutely loved it or adored it, you'd give it a thumbs up. But thumbs up, you liked it. Thumbs up, I liked it. At this time, I'd like to thank everyone who has downloaded and listened to our little podcast over the past 5 years. Chris and I have truly enjoyed doing this show for ourselves and for you, our listeners, and for our new listeners. And we hope to continue our little show for as long as possible. I'd also thank our speakeasy guest, Chris Ferraris from the Imperial Scum, and Dave Rodriguez and Mark Risen from Sequel This for joining our fun this year. We hope to have the Junk Drawer Boys as well as a guest in our Season 6 episodes. So with that, I would like to wish everyone listening the merriest of Christmases and the happiest of New Years. THSP will be back in 2020. Good night, and be good to each other and yourselves. See you soon, and Happy New Year.
Yes.
Chris, you have anything else you'd like to say?
No, all I have to say is thanks, everybody, for listening. We hope we've delivered you excellence in our podcasting endeavors here for this season, and I truly hope that our next year will be just as good. So, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yes. Take care, guys. Have a great night, and we'll see you next year. Thanks for listening to our latest episode here at the Speakeasy Podcast Network. If you'd like to contact us, you can at thathorrorshowpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We can be found on Facebook at That Horror Show Podcast, as well as the official Speakeasy Podcast Network Facebook page. So be sure to give us both your likes so you can keep up to date with us and all the other wonderful podcasts at the Speakeasy Podcast Network. We are also on the Twitter machine at That Horror Show 1, and you can also follow the Speakeasy Podcast Network's Twitter handle at TheSpeakeasyPO1. And finally, if you do the gram, the Instagram that is, you can find me at Tim@ThatHorrorShowPodcast. Thanks.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house.
You're goofy. Don't piss me off, Art.
Clark, it's over.
Not according to Santa's watch, it isn't.
Now, come on, son.
Stay out of this, Dad.
Clark, I think it's best if everyone just goes home before things get worse.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to That Horror Show Podcast.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. Have a Happy New Year.